The 412-411 podcast. We are now going video. Ladies and gentlemen, the whole purpose of this podcast is to talk to a forum membership about what's going on, the latest and greatest. Today I've got special guest, Ms. Joan Baker, political affairs for UA Local 412, and executive director, Mr. Brian Condon. Thank you very much, sir, for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to talk about New Mexico building trades and all the things that are going on with that. Political season just ended, and a lot of things happened, Ms. Joan. Brian, before we get into it, building trades. What is building trades to the rest of the membership?
Well, thank you for having me this morning. The New Mexico Building Trades Council was chartered in the early 40s. It's a consortium of 15 construction craft unions throughout the state of New Mexico, of which UA and IBW are the largest affiliates. And we represent the interests of the affiliated unions, whether it comes to state politics, local, county, and city and county politics, contract negotiations, organizing, anything else we can assist with.
So it's safe to say that all the New Mexico unions working together as one to kind of get things moving for the state.
That's absolutely right. I mean, to the extent that you can bring 15 diverse organizations right together and get them pointed in the same direction is half the trick.
And we have up in Santa Fe things that the building trades works towards. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We've been active in Santa Fe for years. Public Works Minimum Wage Act, the right to work fights, building codes. In this particular case, this last session, we were very happy to actually get House Bill 6, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, across the board. But that was an effort across all the affiliates and the horsepower that we have when we line up together.
Joan, we want to get into House Bill 6 at Roundhouse. It just recently happened. What exactly is it, and how does it affect membership?
Yeah, so, legislative session this year was 60 days. It doesn't sound like a long time, but it's really grueling. UA and the building trades put in all efforts on one particular piece of legislation. It was House Bill 6. So it's kind of complex, and Brian can help us with this as well. So it focused on industrial revenue bonds and utilizing prevailing wage on industrial revenue bonds. So what are industrial revenue bonds? You may have heard of Maxeon, Avon Solar, Amazon got some, Top Golf got some. And so what it is that a local municipality, it could be the city, could be the county, issues a bond to a private business that gives them millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks over 20, 30 years. And so previously, those projects, because they were private, could just be contracted out any other way that a private contract goes out. Brian here and building trades and a lot of work with some community groups, we're like, no, it should pay. It's government money, in essence, and it should pay the way that government jobs do, and that is prevailing wage.
So that was your guys' effort this time, this go around at Roundhouse this year. How did it turn out for things?
So we passed all committees in the House. We passed the House chamber, went over to the Senate, passed Senate committees, passed the Senate chamber, and we're currently waiting on the governor's signature.
Do you expect that to happen?
We're hopeful.
Is there anything that the membership else needs to know about the bill, why it affects them?
Yeah, so prevailing wage, and the building trades and Brian himself did a lot of work on establishing prevailing wage. So what is prevailing wage?
Thank you. Yeah.
Right? So prevailing wage is a set of wages that's determined by the Department of Workforce Solutions, and much of it is based off of our contracts, our collective bargaining contracts. And so what that does is it levels the playing field when contractors are bidding on projects, so that our members and our members' wages are not being undercut with low bidders who are not paying those wages. So whoever gets those jobs must pay those wages and those fringes, leveling the playing field, bringing up more and more work opportunities for our members.
Brian, in your thoughts and your words, why was this bill so important to all the tradespeople in Mexico?
Well, it affects all 15 craft affiliated unions, every one of them. So as Joan mentioned, the Public Works Minimum Wage Act is a very solid one. We've worked on that for a number of years, going all the way back to the 2008-2009, when we modified the law to incorporate our collectively bargained wages. What we negotiate with our contractors get established as the state prevailing wage law, okay? So that was a 6 or 7 year battle, accumulated with a New Mexico Supreme Court decision. But you know, you had people under the last administration really adamantly opposed to implementing that. So I think first they challenged it in federal court, took a year and a half to get that thrown out of court. Then the Susana Martinez administration came in, and we were frozen. Our wage rates, although our contract rates continued to rise, the state wage predetermination was frozen for almost 5 years. So it was hugely important, because putting us at a our contractors at a competitive disadvantage of $2, $3, $4, and $5 an hour per man hour is just impossible for our contractors to compete. That's the importance of a prevailing wage law generally, right? This particular law and industrial revenue bonds is a deferment of property taxes, compensating taxes, gross receipts taxes, right? That they don't pay for 20 or 30 years, depending on the individual industrial revenue bond, which are billions of dollars worth of tax deferments that go to creating economic developments. And some of them are very, very, very commonly known, as Joan mentioned. Facebook utilized an industrial revenue bond for a series of industrial revenue bonds. Facebook, Intel, even Urenco down in the southwestern part of the state. So they're a very useful tool for economic development. All this bill did was saying, okay, for the deferments that these entities are receiving, that their requirement is that they pay New Mexico prevailing wage, which is based on our contracts.
So this bill creates a higher wage standard across the state. How did this, because all the affiliates and all of our members go, what is Building Trades doing? What are they? What are they doing for us? And it's for the higher wage standards. How does this even get to the roundhouse? Does it, you guys just knock at the door and get them to say, hey, we need higher wage standards?
Well, the Building Trades affiliates and the Building Trades has been very active in electoral politics. Okay. And when we elect people to the House and Senate in New Mexico, or a city council or a county commission, we really work hard to identify and support and elect people that understand that this is actually good for our economy. Mm-hmm. To build a high wage economy, there requires one thing, high wages. Mm-hmm. And you know, we use that kind of as a centerpiece. You hear Republicans and Democrats talking about building a high wage economy. You can't build a high wage economy without the one thing, mm-hmm. higher wages. So the concept, you know, I thought about this for a number of months and consulted with some people that have a broad knowledge of economics in our state. I was appointed to an Opportunity Investment Board, which is about $160 or $180 million that they wanted to circulate out to foster economic development. During that process, we wanted to have an advantage to contractors that are actually in not contractors, but organizations or developers that are actually incorporating union pension trust funds into this economic development. We asked for a tiebreaker, and the development community basically slashed their wrists. They were like, we're not, don't want you, don't need you, this is not your space, go do your union stuff. Well, that kind of aggravated me a little bit. So they could have had me at a tiebreaker, probably. I mean, if I'd have got that, it wouldn't have spun me all up to say, all right, how do we level this playing field? So that got me to thinking on the kind of corporate welfare, as some would refer to it. How do we level that playing field? Which was the concept that happened on a Super Bowl Sunday with an economist friend of mine and some others that were saying, all right, what's the best way? What would be the easiest way? It's actually a very simple bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one paragraph that actually caused all this to move. Now, the detractors of it, the NAOP and the Chambers of Commerce and the City of Albuquerque and, you know, all that, their whole apparatus over there, that they thrive on the tax abatements. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, on currently, until this bill gets signed into law, the only requirement for an IRB project is that they pay state minimum wage.
Right.
State minimum wage.
What is state minimum wage?
It's 12. Statewide, it's 12, and I think a few communities, Albuquerque and Santa Fe, have a slightly higher wage rate.
And this bill is looking for what wage?
Well, our collective bargaining rates, which is, you know, it's much higher than
right.
that. The double whammy that I think local governments get, and by the way, Bernalillo County supported this and passed a resolution supporting this bill. 4-1. They had one other GOPs didn't. They liked it the way it was.
Sure.
So the largest county in the state is recognizing the fact that these outside entities coming in, Amazon, Netflix, right? They have an incredible economic leverage over local governments. So when they abate the income to the local government, right? And then, consequently, you have low-road contractors that are awarded these projects. Many of these workers qualify for low-income tax credit, food stamps. I mean, a number, there's 7 or 8 that the local government is now having to pay out.
Right.
So on top of the tax abatement.
Wow, yeah.
So, you know, it was a pretty clear imbalance. From my perspective, and we were from a concept stage. We talked to our leadership teams in the House and the Senate. I think there was an immediate. The policy is solid, right? The multiplier effect by our members' earning power in the economy is huge. So the multiplier effect. The less pressure on support systems for underpaid workers, the pressure on that kind of alleviates. So on the policy side, it's solid economically and otherwise. So then you get to the political side of it. Well, I mean, if we won't give these tax breaks and abatements, 30 years, and then some of them, $400-$600 million at a swat, right? If we don't do that, well, we'll go to Alabama.
Right.
Well, that's kind of like our members saying, if I don't have to go to work, I don't have to pay taxes. That really is what the equation is, right? I think the interest in the policy was very important. The politics of it is important to it as well. We have many friends up there that recognize that our members get up and go to work and they travel around the state and we build critical infrastructure, whether it's the national defense, whether it's water systems, wastewater systems, schools. They recognize the value of that. Not so much on the minority side of the aisle right now.
So this bill won't even hit the floor unless we have those allies to sponsor this.
Well, that's how legislation works, right? I mean,
so who are our building trades allies up there?
Well, I would say, well, if you look at the nose count in the House and the Senate, we didn't lose a Democrat in the House or the Senate in any of the committees that it was assigned to. Zero. We lost not one. Now, we didn't pick up any GOP support. So the caucuses as a whole really, really understand the value of what we bring to the table and what our members bring to the table. So they understand that. I would say that Rena Skopanski, who's the majority floor leader, was just a terrier when it came to this bill. Rena Skopanski, the majority floor leader, she's a Democrat from Santa Fe, and Mimi Stewart, right here from this district, right, the international district, she's the president pro tem, and they agreed to sign on and sponsor. And then we got the speaker, and we got a number of others, Joseph Sanchez and others that were listed sponsors.
Wonderful. So, Ms. Jones, any other thoughts that everybody needs to know about?
Yeah, just kind of to follow up a little bit on what Brian was saying, you know, when we're talking about economic development, which is really what an IRB is and what this bill focused on, how do you have economic development on minimum wage?
What does IRB stand for?
IRB is an industrial revenue bond.
Gotcha.
And so, like, you want to build up your economy, you don't build up your economy on minimum wage. You want to bring in, you know, bigger businesses, you want to bring in, like, Facebook and Meta has been great for our members. We have tons of members out at Intel. So there have been companies that have used IRBs that have still used, you know, our members and our wages, but there were many, many, many who were not. And, you know, the prevailing wage law essentially says if it's a government project, if it's government money, it needs to use prevailing wage. Well, even though this is a private project, it's still government money. The abatement is still government money.
It's interesting the way these things are structured, and they're it's a very clever way to get around the constitutional anti-donation clause. State and local governments can't give resources to outside entities without receiving something in return. So they created this system of IRBs, right, which is probably suspect in general. I mean, I think they're a useful tool. The very first IRB that I was aware of was at Fab 9 at Intel. And they built right into the IRB prevailing wage way back then. Other entities that have utilized industrial revenue bonds, Meta, they bought the building trades brands. They bought UA, IBW, Ironworkers. It's by and large a union project. And they came in and they said, this is how we do business. So there were other opportunities, and Urenco, which was huge at the time, there wasn't much else going on in the state. They partially funded the uranium enrichment facility down there with industrial revenue bonds, and by and large, IBW and the UA had hundreds of people out there. Now, there's a an addition getting ready to happen down there that I think our contractors are well positioned on, so it won't really impact the course of how Urenco does business. They know what they pay for, they know what they're getting, they know what they're getting, they know what they can depend on. A lot of times in this market, it's a dependability. I mean, you can throw all the money in the world at it, and if you don't have people that can actually go out there and turn the wrenches, it ain't gonna happen.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think one piece that we didn't cover because we covered wages, but how this bill pertains to apprenticeship, and I think Brian understands that.
Sure. We see the highest propensity of the utilization of construction apprentices, and I say that generally, right, on the prevailing wage side. On the prevailing wage side where you have an obligation to pay, you're either using a journey level worker, or a registered apprentices. There's not helpers and all these temp service people out there.
Right.
So Under the current condition, I would venture to say that probably 80 to 90% of our registered apprentices in the state of New Mexico are working on prevailing wage jobs.
Right.
So if we can expand this market and put a higher demand, Joan and the UA and IBEW, we've done a good job of attracting people that want to align with our apprenticeship programs. Do we have enough opportunities on the other side? Right now, I would venture to say we have people on waiting lists.
Yeah. Lines down the block, setting up to be apprentices for that.
There you go. Yeah. And so you have uniform wages and fringe benefits, health insurance, pension, things that we have for the last 60 or 70 years really believed our people deserve and are willing to work for.
So you guys have been very busy of late. We're awaiting a signature for this bill. It's not completely over. The higher wages and apprenticeship. What is up next for building trades? What's the next project, the next goal? What are we looking to do for everybody and all the affiliates?
Well, we have a number of projects currently in the queue. Los Alamos National Laboratories is a pretty critical project right now, and it's going at about a 90 degree angle now. They want to go vertical, right? Which is going to put a lot of it's a huge challenge to accomplish what that mission is up there. So that's ongoing, has been ongoing for a number of years.
Is it a manpower challenge or
it's both? It's both. It's one of the most critical environments on the planet. Number one, you can't just run out there and, it's frustrating, it's critical, it's a long distance up there, the hours are crazy. So just any challenge you can imagine, our people are living right now today,
right?
A couple of projects that I think are in the offing was, we previously mentioned the Urenco uranium enrichment facility. That is, I think, strategically in the energy discussion, not only locally or nationally, but internationally, is a huge cog in our country's effort to maintain, if that's what we're doing these days, maintain our dominance in that field. Interestingly, that you're seeing more and more and more local governments issuing industrial revenue bonds for small and even moderate and even ginormous renewable energy projects. Wind, solar, transmission, they're all allowed to be financed by industrial revenue bonds. And especially in the solar industry, what we're seeing, they have abrogators which come in, and it's kind of a paper deal they do with the utility, and at the end of the day maybe they get electricity and maybe they don't, but improving the lot of all those workers I think is something that we should all be most proud of.
And something I don't think our members realize about building trades, they've heard me talk about project labor agreements and PLAs. Those agreements are held by the building trades. So Brian is the one who goes in and negotiates anything that needs to be negotiated in that. If there's extra things that they need, or if there's carve-outs that need to happen, like the pool, the community pool project. So that's another important role that building trades has, is every single PLA, the one out at the airport, that all goes through building trades. Building trades is the one of the parties to those contracts.
But the affiliates still approve them.
Of course.
They don't give me carte blanche. We passed an ordinance in the city of Albuquerque 3-4 years ago, and it mandated any project over $10 million automatically goes into a project labor agreement scenario. Right?
Okay, I thought it was $1 million. It's $10 million?
It's $10 million.
Okay.
Right? You don't build much for $1 million
right,
anymore. But the result of that, we did a couple of parks, we did a couple of ball fields, and then we got a nice almost $100 million airport renovation, which the contrast between how they had previously performed work out at the airport, which was a complete disaster, versus what they've gotten now,
right,
with union crafts populating that job, they're thrilled.
And standards.
It's same, like they expect it now.
Quality, right.
So the county has a similar, it's any project over $7 million that the county lets, would have to go back to this for the county commission to approve or not approve that particular project. They're not perfect. They're working well. It kind of expands our ability to have an instant, real-time opportunity to adjust things in a real-time basis instead of waiting till UNMH is a great example. Their project appears to be 2 or 2.5 years behind schedule. They weren't interested in doing a PLA with us. Now, we have some union crafts on the job. The majority are not.
Right.
And it's been an absolute unmitigated disaster. All right. They have no form or structure or really a common mission across all crafts.
Right. So this question might be a little off, but a lot of the men and women of all the trades watch all the news channels of what's happening coming down from Washington, D.C. How does that affect, or could it affect, New Mexico and building trades affiliates? Again, it's too, because we hear departments getting slashed or moved around or reorganized. Is there anything that you know that you can speak on that affects New Mexico currently or in the future? Or is this still kind of unknown?
Well, there's a lot of it that's unknown. I think it's coming closer into focus on what they intend to do up there. Under the last administration, we had the CHIPS Act. We had a number of initiatives that were designed to stimulate the build-out of infrastructure, whether it's energy, whether it's computer chips, regardless of what it is. Well, it doesn't seem as those have the potential to continue rolling on. Now, that could impact current facilities we have right now. Intel, Maxeon was going to be built under the auspices of the CHIPS Act, and a number of other projects that you're seeing. Renewable energy projects, you know, those are all on a lifeline at this point right now.
Gotcha. And again, that's a tricky question because we can't see the future. We're only reacting to
what's going on. I received a letter this morning, a pretty startling letter on Dodge has discovered collective bargaining agreements at DOE sites.
Mm.
What ultimately they decide to do with that is anybody's guess. But it doesn't sound like they do not have a predisposition to say order, structure. That's really not what that's really not what's been a high priority for them. And on the flip side of that, that's what the DOE kind of depends on when you come into these critical nature projects like we do in Los Alamos and Sandia.
Joan, moving forward, what's on building trades? What's on your docket?
So we're getting ready to go into municipal elections. So
when is that?
It's November this year. For the mayor and city council.
Right.
So we've struggled with Albuquerque City Council after the last election. So there's some seats that we need to get. One in particular where we have somebody in there with a D behind their name who does not behave like that.
Mm.
We're after that individual particularly. If people remember a few years ago, we did a big social media post that Councillor Luis Sanchez calls union member slugs. That guy. We're after that guy. We're looking at the mayor's race. The current mayor saved our PLA from a vote and a gentleman who called union member slugs. The mayor came right here in the UA and single-handedly saved the project labor agreement.
He vetoed it.
He vetoed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he saved that we still have those. He's going to run for a third term. So we're looking at that. We're looking at city council for sure. And really trying to focus on that. I mean, we already have people come in to us about running for governor and the primary for governor, but I think, you know, number one priority needs to be these municipal elections, especially when we see the city council impacting us the way that, that they have the last 2 years.
And it's very important that we think globally, but we act locally, and the fact that the city, the mayor could be determined by a few thousand votes, 100%. And the fact that the tradespeople here, if they all support the same direction for the person that, you know, impacts their lives the most, is huge. And the fact that, you know, you guys are going after that and being diligent on who we support is a big thing as well. Anything else moving forward with the UA that we have?
No, I think, you know, it's crazy. Session just ended last week, and now focus is 100% turned to the local municipal elections. Before we even catch a breath from that, they're going to be dragging us into primary races for state races next year, which is going to be, you know, the governor, the land commissioner, the secretary of state, like, attorney general, like a lot of big state level races. And then of course, you know, we're going to have to focus on keeping our congressional leadership in Washington, especially with all of the uncertainty there. So now we're back into electoral work. But electoral work, as Brian explained to us when we very first sat at this table, is how we get things done, how we got House Bill 6 passed, and had great leadership, had leadership come up and support this and make sure that it got through to protect our members, to benefit our members, and not just UA, but all the building trade members that we work with together. So I think we're just shifting to elections to ensure that we have those relationships and the political power to do things. You know, I don't think our members understand how political their jobs are. You know, they're like, I'm not that into politics. Well, your job is very political.
And your vote matters.
Yes.
100%. Well, I want to thank you both for your time coming in here, because the men and women of the trades work very hard every single day as a career to work, and to understand that there are people out there that are going up to Santa Fe, going to city council, going to the mayor's office, fighting for their livelihood and their families is huge. Because we all need to know that. And we don't always get to see what's going on behind the scenes. They're going to the job site, they're going home to their families, and they don't realize that there's a lot behind the scenes that's happening. So I appreciate you both for your time coming here. Moving forward, we have the union tradition that is a golf tournament coming up for the Building Trades Golf Tournament. I believe it was raised almost $40,000 last year for the diabetes fund, which is huge. The goal is set a little higher to beat that. The information is down in the link to support that if you want to play golf for a good cause. And it's a union tradition on Father's Day weekend. And all the proceeds go to that. So you get to hang out and compete against other unions, which I think is a underlining fun thing about the weekend. So please, if you're interested in that and want to support, please do that as well. The 4/12 monthly meeting comes up on the second Friday of every month.
Second Friday of every month. So the Apprentice Council comes in and meets at 5:30 here at the hall. And then at 7:00, there's the general member meeting. And that, again, is the second Friday of every month.
So if you want to know what's going on with your local, please attend that every second, once a month. It's a little time out of your day, but it really lets you know what's going on and what's moving forward. Your voice is 100% heard, and have the opportunity to speak at that as well. Thank you guys for coming out. Appreciate the time. Also, we also have a chance where you guys can ask questions for our next podcast. Courtney Eichhorst, Building a Business Manager, will also be speaking and answering your guys' questions coming up. We want to be able to, if you have a question or concern, have the opportunity to talk to your union and your local to learn more about it. So please, if you have a question for them, send it to the messages on any of the platforms you see. Just type it in. You can be anonymous. You can leave it at the hall. We'll have those questions coming up. We're here for you guys, the 412-411 podcast. Brian, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Joan,
thank you.
Thank you, guys.